You know, not too long ago, there was a video that was making the rounds, and people were interpreting the song in their own way. Because I'm happy, and they're dancing around, and you see all sorts of people dancing in different circumstances. They're happy. I wonder if in your marriage, you're happy. If you're not, we have some excellent advice for you, some starting points for ways that you can get happier in that relationship, whether you're newlywed or you've been married a long, long time. This is Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and Jim, we're coming back to this topic because the time with our guests proved so beneficial, I think, to so many in our audience.
It did, John, and if people missed the program last time, download it. However you can listen to it, because I think there were some golden nuggets there that could really help marriages of all stages. Mm-hmm. And I want to introduce our wonderful guests, Les and Leslie Parrott. From Seattle, Les and Leslie have been doing marriage mentoring and helping couples for 25 years, a quarter of a century.
That makes it sound incredibly old.
Look at me. Do I look that old?
No, you don't look old enough. This is what women love to hear. You don't look old enough to have done this for 25 years. But, you know, last time we talked about this distinction between joy and happiness, and I thought you did a great job bringing all of the high-level Christian attitude about that into a right perspective. And I'm guilty of that. I often make this distinction, join the conversation about, it can't be all about happiness, come on. And I thought you did, again, a wonderful job doing that. But Les, let me start here again. That broader perspective of happiness, what is it the Lord wants? What are we really trying to hit here in this life when it comes to happiness?
Yeah, you know, I think that God wants us to be happy in spite of our circumstances. That's what we mean by joy, I suppose. But whatever you call it, it's a combination of not just pleasurable experiences, but meaningful experiences. Let me give you a quick illustration. Leslie and I teach this class at our university, at Seattle Pacific University. We'll have 200 students in this class. It's on relationships and so forth. And we will ask them early on, what makes you guys happy? And video games, Netflix, you know, fishing, whatever it is. And it's all these activities that we think make us happy. And then we eventually kind of say, let's do a little experiment. And half the class, in the next 48 hours, we want you to just indulge yourself in those things that make you happy. Mm. Just if it's playing video games, you go do that. And if it's whatever, just, and then this other half of the class, what we want you to do is give your life away in the next 48 hours. We want you to go minister to people. We want you to go, do something that adds value to other people. And, volunteer and so forth. They come back and we begin to debrief. What was the experience like? Mm. And what do you think happens in that classroom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's incredible because all of a sudden the students that were doing the video games and all the other stuff went, oh, I guess we kind of missed out. These people are really filled with a lot of happiness and joy over here. And that's what we mean by that balance of meaning as well as pleasure. You can't neglect it. When you go after pleasure, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. It's guaranteed. If that's what you're after, how do we go have fun today? That's cool. Go do that. But just know you're going to be disappointed because not everything is going to be fun.
Well, why then do we continue then to come to the trough of pleasure as a culture? I mean, the culture is screaming at us. It's all about your pleasure. And even as Christians, we continue to come toward that direction, trying to find meaning and purpose and fulfillment when it's almost like just eating too much sugar. It's not good for you.
Sugar high has a law of diminishing returns, doesn't it? It drops us lower than ever. And I think that's a good way to look at happiness because I think we go after it because we don't know what else to do in order to achieve that. And deep in our hearts, I think God has planted a desire. We've been created for joy. We've been created for that. And so if we don't have biblical wisdom on how to pursue that, I mean, one of the reasons meaning brings us so much happiness is because there's engagement in it. You know, we're fully engaged in service. We're giving ourselves away. And we also know that any way that we can use our gifts that God's hardwired into us, you know, that sense of flow and engagement sweeps us up in a deep sense of joy. And that's where the meaning and purpose comes.
Les, you're a clinical psychologist. Would you say, with everything that you've studied and just the way the human mind works, did God create us to serve others? I mean, he told us to serve others, but do you think he created us in our very core to serve others, that our greatest sense of joy comes when we give ourselves away.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that he did. We're created for relationship. It's our deepest longing, and our greatest fulfillment is found in relationship to other people. And that's not just peer-to-peer, but it's when we reach out to other people. And as iron sharpens iron, as Proverbs says, we help each other along the pathway of knowing God.
Right.
And so it's that idea of our truest sense of purpose is fulfilled when we are giving our lives away to other people. Mm. That's what makes us the happiest. That's where true joy abounds.
We also today wanted to talk about, and connecting specifically to the empty nesters. There was an article a while back, I think in the Wall Street Journal, about the graying of divorce, that couples are committed to raising their kids. They're invested in it. You've got the helicopter parents, you know, they're at every practice, everything, and it's all about the kids and the kids doing well. And then the child grows up and goes off to college or starts their vocation, leaves the house. And mom and dad look at each other and go, we don't know each other anymore. I don't know if I want to be with you anymore. How does this apply to that couple that is now in the wilderness? They don't know if they want to even stay together. How do they turn that corner and make their relationship fulfilling and happy?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring this up, because when you look at the big trend of fulfillment and happiness in marriage, which, by the way, this book is about happiness in marriage, and I should remind our listeners, the hinge point of this whole thing is marriage was never designed to make you happy. You make your marriage happy. And that's what these six power boosters, these happiness boosters, are about. And they're counterintuitive. We don't do them naturally. But when you look at the big trend of marriage satisfaction, and it starts off at a 10 out of 10. Why'd you get married? Oh, this is fantastic. We love each other. It's fantastic. We're on our honeymoon. And you gradually see this decline in fulfillment, and it reaches its lowest ebb about the time we have teenagers in the home, okay? And then we see a bit, it's known as the inverted bell curve. And then it begins to go up in the second half of marriage for those couples that stay together. But we also know the biggest spike in divorce is right there, what you're talking about, in the empty nest. And those couples are missing out, I believe, on the greatest part of marriage. Because in that second half of marriage, the level of fulfillment begins to skyrocket for those couples that hang in there in spite of that kind of low ebb, right?
Yeah, but you get the graying of divorce in that they're making those decisions right when not only they feel at their lowest ebb, but their marriage is at the lowest ebb, because, and it's not always those, you know, the kids' fault.
Right, their tank's a bit empty.
Their tank's empty. They've been pursuing work. Work's demanding. You know, they've got parents they're taking care of in many cases. They've got kids. So they haven't had the luxury of staying focused and giving energy to their marriage. Even sometimes couples who long to do that, enjoy each other, have still, life has not allowed them to invest
and,
at the
and
level.
And so they, you know, that proverbial saying, they cut down the tree in the wintertime, which you should never do, right? And it's the lowest ebb, and they're going, let's call it quits. You know, we got the kids through school. It's time to move on. Obviously sad for a lot of reasons, but like I said, sad primarily because they're missing out on this great journey ahead of them, that they have so many choices that they can make to make it a different experience.
In a way, they've earned the right now to enjoy the happiest season of married life, and they just give that away right before they step into those years.
For the couple that's feeling that way, it's a degree of severity. I mean, some couples will be at the bottom of that description that we gave. They're ready to call it quits. Other couples may be seeing a glimmer of hope that now that the fast pace is behind us, we can be doing some different things, investing in each other. How does that conversation go at the dinner table tonight? What would you suggest, or maybe it's not there, it's later. What would you suggest they do tonight to rekindle the dream?
Well, number one, in my opinion, is you take inventory. Let's find out, where are we at? What do we have going in our favor? What are the things that we've been doing well, and what is it that we'd like to change, right? It's that old, you know, perspective of awareness is curative. If you become aware of what's going on right now that needs to be different, then we can do something about it. If we don't acknowledge it, it just continues.
Well, and actually, that's pretty fertile soil for any couple to really step into this next booster of happiness that we want to talk about, which is dreaming dreams together, because they're at the place where that can infuse their relationship with really fresh energy if they have the courage to do that.
Yeah, to dream a dream. That's the third kind of counterintuitive lever that we say you can pull in your relationship to bring about more happiness. And
let me push on that a bit, because these are people again, if we're talking about the empty nester, maybe some of their dreams have not been achieved. They're starting to feel like now they're in their 40s and mm-hmm. 50s and beyond, and they're thinking, we don't have time nor energy, nor perhaps even the opportunity to pursue some of those dreams. How do they pull themselves up out of that kind of, you know, downer into a place of more joy and more happiness to say we can still dream dreams?
You know, I think this was beautifully illustrated in mm-hmm. a little motion picture called Up. Do you remember the movie?
Oh, yeah. One of our favorites.
We love that. And I love the opening, you know, that
That
shows the marriage over the lifespan.
Yeah. With no words, and we've mm-hmm. sometimes showed that at some of our live marriage events and so forth. And people cry just watching that. And
I cry. What are you talking about?
but you know, that movie is all about fulfilling our dreams as a couple together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they didn't get to do that in that marriage because she passed away.
But even in that story, what I think illustrates what we're talking about, you know, they've had many setbacks. They dreamed of going to, what is it, Paradise Falls, you know.
Which was near Buenos Aires.
You know, and they never got there. All their little jar of money, they were saving coins, they had to bust that jar for so many reasons along the way. They dreamed of becoming parents and had the heartbreak of infertility. I mean, so many of their dreams as a couple were unfulfilled, and yet it was still in the pursuit of that final dream that they found so much purpose, joy, meaning, and engagement, and gave their lives away in the service of other people and to one another, that it didn't matter whether the dream was fulfilled or not. It was the journey. Right. It was the hope. It was the shared excitement over that and making that happen for each other. So in a way, life is real. We don't get every dream we dream, and sometimes we get what we dreamed for, and then we're left more disillusioned than ever because it didn't bring the happiness we expected it to.
I got to tell you, we have a reminder of this powerful story not far from our home in Seattle, because there is a real life person that was had an up, what we call the up house. And this little house, you'll see it.
The sweet little woman.
That is surrounded by this five-story building. And then this little tiny one-story house is down there. And she's like what they modeled the movie after, I think, because she just stuck to her gun. She's not going to sell this house. This is where all of her dreams were.
She'd lived there for 50 years.
Edith Macefield, yeah. And so when we see that house, we always go, what should we be dreaming about when we drive by it? It's a monument to this idea of dreaming together for us. And so I would challenge every couple out there that's listening to us right now to begin to build a dream list. There's nothing wrong with doing this. Dreaming together in concrete ways. What's on our bucket list?
Yeah, a marriage bucket list is a great thing.
Have you ever come up with a bucket list with your wife?
I think we have it, but we don't have it written down.
Yeah.
I think we have two or three items there that regularly rotate in as we do them, but so we don't have it written down.
I want to give you guys an assignment. You
it's not trapeze.
You know, maybe that's on Jean's list.
I'll ask her tonight if that's on her list.
But here's my challenge. You say you have two or three that are kind of rolling around your heads. I want you to come up with a written list of 50.
50?
50 things on your bucket list.
I don't think I have a list of 50 of anything.
That's why I'm here. I'm here to help you.
Start with 10?
But the reason I say 50, if the two of you will just brainstorm crazy things, I want to go to a rodeo. I want to go to whatever it is.
Now that's crazy. Yeah. We can do that pretty easily. Okay.
Yeah, that's attainable here in Colorado.
But you make your list of things that you haven't done together as a couple. Little things, big things.
And by the way, these things aren't just, like we've been talking about earlier, aren't just pleasurable moments we want to share, but it might be dreams of the way we want to serve others. You know, we've always wanted to, you know, give our lives away this way. We've always wanted to help a certain kind of person.
Mm. 2 years ago, we made this bucket list, 50, by the way.
Jinketed that.
Well,
50 of those
one of the
types.
Things we did was put on there, we wanted to start participating in this thing called the Street Feed in Seattle. And once a month we go down and we feed needy teenagers. Teenagers are really, really struggling.
Teens living on the street, give them a warm meal once a week.
And so we started doing that with our family. I don't think we would have done that if we didn't make this list, this bucket list.
To think about it in order to do it.
Yeah, and so Leslie makes a great point. It's not just about, oh, we want a trip to Paris or we want this or that. It's big things.
And by the way, just to any mom who might be listening out there, I've never been so fulfilled watching my teenage boys get in a kitchen and slice Brussels sprouts and fry up bacon and
wash dishes. You actually feed them Brussels sprouts?
That sounds cool. Man,
punishment.
That is torture.
We don't even do that in our home.
What are you doing? There's no happiness in Brussels sprouts. I got to tell you.
But there's joy.
There's joy.
Well,
there's
your body's nourished.
There's
happy.
Joy.
It's like one big vitamin pill.
Sprout joy.
And by the way, speaking of the empty nest in this aspect, our pastor recently, he has a sabbatical.
Love it. He's been serving our church, he and his wife, for 20 years. And Richard and Donna Dahlstrom, they're a fabulous couple. And they're right now doing something on their bucket list. They're taking this three-month sabbatical. They're hiking in the Alps, which they're both fabulous wilderness, you know, lovers, hut to hut. For 40 straight days. I mean, we've been hearing about the severe weather.
Which is not,
say,
fun to me at all, but that's fun to them. So.
That is not on your bucket.
No, I have no need to do that.
But it's infused with so much joy and meaning. They're blogging along the way. The spiritual lessons are flowing. And it's because it's so deeply planted in them. It's a God-given dream.
Mm. Lesson, Leslie, you say that couples do not simply drift apart. We often say that, you know, how at the graying of divorce, what we were just talking about, how couples often drift apart. You say they make that decision that blocks that emotional intimacy. So they're not just at the whim of nature. It's not just drifting apart. They're intentionally making a decision not to stay connected. What's the difference between the fallacy or the myth of drifting apart as opposed to choosing not to be intimate?
Yeah, I always cringe when I hear that from a couple in a counseling session that, oh, we just have kind of drifted apart. I feel like that's such a lame excuse in your marriage. You don't just drift apart. You make choices in your relationship. It's not a tide that just takes this person this way and that person the other way. It's really choices.
It is, and they're moment-to-moment choices, and they're often seemingly insignificant. I think that's the thing, which really, I think, is the research that led us into the next happiness booster that we like to talk about, because it's all about, you know, investing and celebrating each other from moment to moment in marriage.
Yeah, and I know some of our listeners are going, well, no duh, you're supposed to do that. But here's what we know from research. We don't do that very well in our marriages. In fact, we know from research that in a standard conversation throughout an evening that a couple might have, they will share 3-1 positive events to negative events that happen to them during that day. And the response that they get from their partner is usually an obligatory, oh, that's cool. You know, hey, what's on TV tonight or whatever? And we don't really celebrate each other. This was fantastic research done at the University of Santa Barbara. And when a couple will begin to consciously focus on, and this is what we mean by celebrate each other. It's not just the birthdays and stuff that we're talking about at all. It's the daily celebration.
The regular
birthdays are good. Birthdays are fine. Right. Celebrating everything is
we're
good.
Not discounting
but that's
that.
Not what this is about.
Sounds like Leslie's birthday's coming up.
Oh, it's always coming up. Yeah.
But you're talking about every day. Ouch. Every day, invest in the positive statements to your spouse.
Those little moments.
And there's two things that have to happen. There needs to be high support and high energy. That's what constitutes celebration for a couple.
And that's really the glue that holds you from drifting apart. You know, because if Les engages in me, if I come home and say, oh, you know, I ran into my friend Claire and we had coffee today. I never thought we'd get to go, you know, go pray at Discovery Beach, my favorite place in the world. And he goes, oh, really? Well, here's what happened to me today. Yeah. that's not high support.
Or that's cool. What's for dinner tonight? Yeah. Or just kind of discount it, you know, just kind of roll along. In comparison to that, I can say something like, oh, I know that makes you so happy. Tell me more. What took place? What was that about for you?
Then
that's
he's engaging
invitation.
Me. Mm. And that celebrates me because he's stepping into my life with energy, you know, and he's supporting it because he knows it got me excited. And those are the little decisions that connect us.
Now, let me tell you one other thing that we do that we feel like is a way to celebrate each other and our marriage. It's something that we call the awe wall, A-W-E, the awe wall.
And by the way, this is easy. Anyone can do this, yeah. And it's so fun.
And Jim, you've seen this in our home. It's in our kitchen. There's a little desk area, and it's kind of a ribbon board. And it changes because Leslie's so great at doing this. But if you look at that, there's passages of time. Sometimes we go way back, years mm-hmm. back. Sometimes it's something that happened just that week.
It's a place where we gather mementos from each other's lives, and we put them, you know, it's a visible place. It's in our kitchen, which is open into our living family area, and we grab pictures, snapshots, things we've done together.
Ticket stubs
of something, you know, events in anyone's life. Mm. You know, if they got a note and someone said, thank you, you did a great job. And we gather them and keep those mementos visible so that everyone in our home feels like, wow, you know, people are celebrating me right now. I matter. I'm right. seen. I'm
no, that's
known.
Good. And you talk about them.
We talk about them. They spark conversation.
The awe wall. The or awe. The wall of awe.
The yes.
wall. I like that.
The wall of awe.
Like a movie title.
The wall of awe.
I'm gonna talk to Gene. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's really fun, and the kids like it, too, because we put stuff up there. But the whole idea is if you have this attitude that is high support, high energy of engaging each other in your relationship.
Don't let the moments pass by. Don't right. let those points of connection just slip by you unawares because you're understandably tired, you're distracted, you know, you've got demands on your time. Nobody does it to be cruel or mean, but we lose our connection because we don't step into those moments.
You talk about, last time we talked about a set point, that you have certain biological
right.
factors, and then you have a joyful or happiness set point.
Yeah, an emotional set point.
I would think it's true even in this area where you get, we may call it a rut. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you might refer to it, but you are who you are. You
right.
you settle into who you are. To break out of that, to do things like you're talking about, to dream dreams, to remember each other, to celebrate each other on a daily basis, to
right.
feed into each other. I would assume many are going, wow, that sounds exhausting. I just like going to work, coming
yeah.
home, having a little chit chat, making sure we pray together.
Right.
And pat each other on the head. We did a good job today.
We got through it.
Because this stuff, man, this sounds like a big to-do list.
Well, I kind of love it that you're bringing that up because, you know, I'm going to equate it to physical fitness. My husband is a fanatic. He wears his Fitbit, and he doesn't try to run a marathon. He just wants to walk a certain number of steps every day.
Right.
And the whole idea that is, you know, we have a certain level of physical well-being. You know, not everyone's the same on that, but we can all do something simple so that we're heading in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And something as simple as walking a few steps a day with intention makes a huge difference.
Well, and let me tell you what we did for readers of this book, Making Happy. We put together a 21-day happiness plan that is those little steps that you can take one thing each day. And you get a code in the book. You can download it and print this thing out. And the two of you walk through this 21-day plan. We know it takes about 21 days to change some
to
fundamental habits in your relationship. And that's why we put that in there. So if a listener's out there feeling, oh, it sounds cool, but I don't know how I'm going to do all this, we've made it as easy as pie for you to be able to do
and
that.
I mean, that's just one simple step a day. I mean, these are not huge, you know, tasks. And by the way, just as a reminder, these are things that actually boost happiness. This is a fun to-do
list.
It's
not about big sacrifice.
Right.
This is infusing fun into your relationship.
Love it.
Hey, it has flown by once again, you guys. this has been so much fun. Your book, Making Happy, I'll relent. I'll get off my joy hiatus. And I think being happy is also something God wants us to be. Thanks so much for being with
us. Our privilege is always good to be with you.
Well, once again, Drs. Les and Leslie Parrott have made this a very fun time and a helpful time, I hope, as we've talked about being happy in marriage and ways to take some steps towards some fun, some enthusiasm, some joy in your marriage relationship.
Our program was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller.
Well, once again, lots of fun and great advice offered from Drs. Les and Leslie Parrott as they talked about being happy in your marriage and the ways that we can take steps towards some fun and joy in the relationship. And their book is called Making Happy, The Art and Science of a Happy Marriage. We have that available for you at our online store, or give us a call. It contains that 21-day happiness plan, which will help you get started on rekindling that aspect of your marriage. Our website is safamily.co.za. And while you're online, please have a look for information on and book your tickets for our upcoming tour of marriage events with Dr. Steve Bass. Steve is an author and counselor with over 30 years of experience in counseling. And he's going to be covering some interesting aspects around emotional connection in an event we're calling Stronger, a 5-step guide to strengthening your marriage. I hope you'll join us at an event in Cape Town, Pretoria, or Durban between the 10th and 18th of August. Let me thank you for standing with Focus in prayer and for your financial support as we work together to help families. Those gifts enable us to produce radio programs and videos, websites, and events all year towards strengthening the family. Everything we do here is to help that initiative and ultimately to introduce individuals and families to the author of family, our Heavenly Father. We invite your partnership as we fulfill that critical mission. For Focus on the Family Africa, I'm Graham Schnell, inviting you to tune in next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.